I am recused from this matter. Justice Miller Lerman will preside. Please give me a moment to exit the courtroom.
Good afternoon. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. I am Victor Jensen, here representing myself today. This case has one issue, financial relief for a person unable to pay, divided into two parts. First, the waiver of probation fees and Statute 29-2262.06, paragraph 4, allows for relief for a person who is unable to pay probation fees. Second part of the case is court costs, and Statute 25-2302 allows that if a person proceeds in forma pauperis, all proceedings and costs shall be done without charge. District Court did err in reviewing these facts because the issue arises, was the person indigent and when, and the district court failed to review the facts that were presented, that it had case history, or the from issues from this case had court records showing that defendant was first declared indigent in 2012, and there were three different attorneys were appointed, so they knew well that the defendant was indigent, and they knew it was indigent at the time of sentencing because there were motions made. There was a motion made by the prosecution to request the defendant to pay part of the attorney's fees. The motion was denied, and there was a motion made to pay the expert witness fees for an indigent defendant. And they did not argue that the defendant was not indigent, but they referred to a technical error that the court-appointed attorney failed to fill out proper paperwork ahead of time, so that was denied.
So you're relying on the fact that previously you'd been granted leave to proceed in forma pauperis in certain proceedings, correct?
Correct.
What's the shelf life of that sort of a finding? How long does that kind of a finding follow a person?
The part I was relying on was I had a court-appointed attorney, so there was a financial hearing to grant that request. So I did proceed to trial with a court-appointed attorney, and that court-appointed attorney is to take care of that case until he's relieved of that, and sentencing is part of the trial of the court. So I was still declared indigent, had a court-appointed attorney clear up through the sentencing phase. So that fact carried over until the trial was over.
Is it a premise of your argument that a determination of indigence for purposes of the in forma pauperis statute is exactly the same and controlled by a determination of indigence for purposes of appointment of counsel?
Yes, according to statute 29-2206, it says that the pertinent date is the date of sentencing.
My question is, I want to be sure you understand my question. Are you arguing that the two standards of indigence, one for purposes of costs and fees, and another for purposes of appointed counsel, are exactly the same?
Yes, because in the statutes that I quoted, it says in there that no additional hearing is required, and it listed several statutes that you could refer to, and a couple of those were if you had a court-appointed attorney, then there would be no need to have another additional hearing to determine if costs and fees could be waived.
Do you have any case law for the proposition that those two standards are identical?
No, I could not find any case law on this, and it's quite obvious because people would not pay an attorney $6,000 to appeal a case that they were requesting $600 relief in. So I could not find any case law, and I do think it's important that there be case law there, because probation is a very good program for correction, and a lot of times the poor people, if they can't afford probation, are given more jail time. So I do think they need to exercise this waiver option, because probation has many advantages. Usually with probation, they're giving community service, and for some person who's made bad decisions or had a poor upbringing, if they get involved in community service and get the reward from helping others, it sometimes changes their mindset. In addition, they can, if money is an issue here, they can keep their job, and if they had a long jail term, they would probably lose their job. Somebody else would have to be doing the work while he was gone. So I think probation is a very good correction method, and I'd like to see it preserved, but one of the issues is that it costs the defendant more because he has to pay probation fees unless they are waived. But even if they waive the probation fees, it's cheaper to the county because $35 a month would be less than $90 or $150 a day for jail. So I think it is a good program, and I would like to see some direction on this to the courts, because many times I do see that if a person for a nonviolent crime is given probation, they often go back in our county court and ask for a straight jail time because they cannot afford the probation fees.
I realize we're not talking about your case, but when we decide cases, we have to structure rules that will apply fairly to all of the cases that come under the statute. And suppose you have someone who obtains informal pauperous status and then a year or two later hits the lottery. You're not contending that that person should be free forever of paying costs and fees.
No.
Or similarly, a medical doctor, for example, who has a tremendous earning capacity, but because of a substance abuse problem, is unable to do so, and in the process, after conviction and before probation is over, licks the problem, starts earning all the money, that person, the shelf life of the IFP can't be forever, can it?
No, and as I understand it, her question was, how long does this last? Well, if you have a court-appointed attorney, they're supposed to see you clear through to the end, past sentencing, but at any time, the prosecution can request a review to see if you have a better job, if you did win the lottery or something. And at a review, the statutes do say that it should be waived and, as long as he's unable to pay. So if the conditions change, then there could be a review, and from that time on, he'd be required to pay his monthly probation fees, etc.
And there again, that argument is based on the premise, as we've discussed before, that the standards are exactly the same for the two different IFP. IFP for costs and fees, or indigence for court-appointed counsel. And you understand if you're not correct about that, this may not turn out the way you want.
Correct.
All right.
Sir, I only want to interrupt you to say, since you're representing yourself, that just means you have 2 minutes.
If
you
could continue, or you could say something. I would be happy to answer any more questions that you have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General representing the state in this matter. I don't think indigency and the ability to pay costs and fees are identical. Indigency has a specific statutory definition, which is found in 29-3901. It says indigency...
For purposes of appointment of counsel.
For purposes of appointment of counsel is the ability or the inability to retain legal counsel without prejudicing one's financial ability to provide economic necessities. That probably factors into the determination whether or not a person has the ability to pay costs and fees, but it's not determinative of it. The ability to pay costs and the probation fees are both essentially defined or circumscribed by statute. And they are circumscribed in separate statutes. The ability to pay costs and the request to the court to be discharged from those, and that's oddly the statutory language, is found in 29-2208, and it simply provides the individual the ability to ask for a hearing to be relieved of paying of fines or costs. After a hearing, it says at the hearing, the person shall have the opportunity to present information as to his or her income, assets, debts, and other matters affecting their ability to pay. Well, the district court in this particular case repeatedly informed the defendant, Mr. Jensen, in this case, that whether you were found to be indigent in 2011 really doesn't have much bearing 6 years later on your ability to pay the costs, the court costs, and your probation fees. Probation fees can be waived, and that statutory process is found in 29-2262.06(4), as Mr. Jensen said, and they are waived, not relieved, and they are waived only as long as the defendant is unable to pay. So it is premised upon the idea that there is going to be, or there is, or can be, a fluid situation with respect to a person's income, which only makes particular sense.
Which, in addition to being fluid, what is the suggestion of 29-2262? I mean, the sensible reading is this: somebody has to put on some information.
Exactly.
Somebody's got to show some numbers.
Right. It says after a hearing, they have to demonstrate that it would payment of the monthly probation programming fees would constitute an undue hardship on them because of either limited income, employment, or school status, or physical or mental handicap. And the statute is quite specific that is what's to be considered. And the waiver is first of all, only the monthly programming fees. Apparently, the $30 enrollment fee is just a non-waiverable fee. It's just because it's not referenced in there. It says you pony up $30 up front, and then the programming fees are due as monthly installments.
But what do you make of subsection 4, that the waiver is in effect only for, and it suggests, a period of time? Does this statute anticipate continuing proofs, or?
Well, I think the statute anticipates that, you know, because probation can run for, you know, up to 5 years, a lot of things can change in 5 years period of time.
Such as my doctor example.
Exactly. People get jobs, lose jobs. They have all sorts of things happen that can impact a person's financial abilities. And consequently, I think it anticipates that either the prosecutor or the probation officer or possibly both will be potentially paying attention to this. And if the person has demonstrated an inability to pay these but later, you know, says gets a good job, say Goodyear or whatever, and starts getting a decent income, then the situation can and should rightfully change.
How to get to Mr. Jensen's, how does this work in real life? Who initiates the waiver or the discontinuance of the waiver?
Well, the waiver, by statute, the court has to impose the probation fee. So it seems to me that once those probation fees are mandatorily imposed, it then falls to the person upon whom those fees have been imposed to say, I can't pay them, here's why. So it seems to me that the burden is on the defendant to offer some sort of justification and evidence that he is unable to pay those fees, and then the district court will either, you know, buy it or not buy it and say, yes, you are relieved of them until such time as you are able to pay them.
In this instance, the county court.
The county court, yeah. I think if the situation changes, it would probably come to the attention of the probation officer first as a result of just, you know, the monthly meetings with them. And presumably the probation officer is asking or keeping track of their employment and whatnot. And if it comes to his attention that, you know, the financial situation has changed, then he would in turn bring it to the attention of either the prosecutor or the court. And then I think it would be incumbent on the prosecutor to essentially make a motion to impose, I guess, the probation fees again because he now has the financial wherewithal to make those payments.
Well, Mr. Jensen has indicated there's some virtues to probation and and being there as opposed to being incarcerated and so forth. So this is the mechanism by which an individual could continue on probation,
yes,
notwithstanding ability or lack of ability to pay.
I think that's correct, yes.
What does our record here tell us about the terms and conditions of his probation? Did they require employment?
You know, I'm not sure that the probation order is actually in the record. Truthfully, I don't recall seeing it there, and I don't recall what the terms of it are, if it is in there, to be perfectly honest. I don't know. Typically, they require them to either have employment or to be actively seeking employment, assuming that there's no reason that, physical incapacity or some reason that they couldn't be seeking employment because of the statutory obligation of the courts to impose the probation fees, presumably that, and it just, idle hands are the devil's work, so the more they're employed, the less likely they are to get into additional difficulties. As in this particular case, I truly don't remember whether it is or not.
What sort of evidence do you think would be sufficient to prove undue hardship in paying probation fees?
Well, I think at a bare minimum, basically monthly income and outgo of, how much money you have coming in, how much money you have going out at a bare minimum.
It sounds to me like you're using sort of the same test that the court applies in deciding whether court-appointed counsel is appropriate.
I don't know how else you'd do it, to be real honest. I mean, you have to look at, if you can pay, and that depends on your bills and what you have coming in. I don't know that there would be any other way to go about rationally doing that. And the programming fees are, $30, $35 a month, I guess it is. So it's not like those are a hideously undue burden. Most people, I think, probably unless they've got outrageous bills to pay, $35 can be, pretty well scraped up pretty easily, I would think, by most people if they have some sort of gainful employment.
Well, there's also sometimes testing fees and other fees that will be imposed with respect to probation.
That's true.
So it's not always just $35 a month.
Well, yeah. That's the routine monthly fee is not unduly burdensome, I wouldn't think, to most people. The other sorts of fees are going to be, I don't really use the word random, but they will be, presumably less than on a monthly basis, depending on what the probation officer thinks is appropriate for each particular individual it's supervising. Unless there are additional questions, we would ask that the order of the district courts affirming the order of the county courts be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
She's correct about the method of income and the expense being part of whether you're eligible for waivers or not. And those are in the court records when you apply for a form of pauperous or for a court-appointed attorney. Those are in there. And my record shows the only income is my Social Security, and my expenses exceed that. And I have been making my monthly required payment for 24 months, my 24 months probation, which is maximum for this misdemeanor, will be up in 20 days. But I've been making faithful payments for 24 months because I'm paid up till May. But at this same rate, it will take me 27 more months to get this paid. So I think it's unreasonable fines and fees. And it says after a hearing, you can have those waived. And it says in there that the hearing has to be on sentencing day, or you can rely on earlier hearings. So there has been a hearing to determine that I was indigent and I should be allowed relief for probation fees and court costs. So do they have any more questions for me?
Any more questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. You're excused. We're adjourned. Thank you.